Maitreya continued to narrate the history of the descendants of Swayambhuva Manu to Vidura, the beginning of Satyuga. Brahma watered Kardava Muni to beget children, so that great Rishi went to the banks of the Saraswati and performed tapasya for 10,000 years. Pleasing the Lord by that activity, Lord Vishnu appeared first in Spurti and then in Sakshat. Lord Vishnu was beautiful, effulgent, and forearms were decorated with, his forearm form was decorated with white lotus flower garland. He is wearing pure yellow silk and dhoti, and his beautiful face was bordered by the dark tresses of his black hair. He was standing upon Garuda's shoulders, floating in the sky above Kardam, and glancing happily at the sage. Kardam fell to the ground, offered obeisances to Lord Vishnu, understanding that his desire had become fulfilled. Standing, Kardam glorified Lord Vishnu, saying, "All must worshipful Lord. My vision has attained perfection by seeing you before me in your beautiful, eternal, transcendental form. Your lotus feet are the boat which can carry one across the ocean of birth and death. Only a fool will worship you for temporary sense enjoyment. But even to such fools you are very merciful, my Lord. I have taken shelter of you while desiring a proper match that will satisfy my household life." Lord Vishnu smiled affectionately and said, "I know your mind, so I've already arranged to give you a suitable lady to marry. O Rishi, those persons who give up everything to serve me with bhakti are never frustrated. 2 days from now, Swayambhuva Manu will come here with his queen Shatarupa, bringing a beautiful daughter to marry you. This girl has good qualities and quite suitable for you. She is the type of girl you have been thinking of in your heart. Soon she will be yours and serve you to your heart's content. She will beget 9 daughters from you to increase the population. By always remembering me and being compassionate to everyone, you'll achieve perfect self-realization. Within me, you will see yourself and everything else. I will manifest a plenary portion of myself through your wife as your son. And I will teach your wife Atmatattva Gyan, knowledge of the truth." Then Lord Vishnu departed, returned to Vaikuntha, and Garuda's wings were vibrating the Samaveda for the pleasure of the Lord. Interesting note. Like people go for a ride in their car and they play a stereo with Prabhupada singing bhajans. It's a very pleasing sound while one's driving their car. So Vishnu, the same tendency or the same activities there millions of years ago in the beginning of Satyuga. There's nothing new under the sun. Vishnu is flying through the skies in his Garuda car, Guru Viman and listening to music. Beautiful Vedic chants being produced by the flapping of his servant Garuda's wings. One day, Swayambhuva Manu arrived with his wife and daughter at Kardama's ashram. Just so happened to be the last day of his 10,000 years of tapasya. And this ashram was located on the banks of Bindu Sarovara, which is apparently, I don't know where it is now, but at that time it was encircled by the Saraswati, and it became extremely special lake, because when Lord Vishnu had visited Kardama Muni there, he cried tears of happiness seeing the sincere tapasya of his devotee Kardama. And those blissful tears mixed in the waters of Bindu Sarovara to make it a tirtha. The tree was surrounded by very auspicious trees full of tasty fruits and beautiful fragrant flowers, and exotic tropical birds were singing here and there. Swayambhuva Manu appreciated the beautiful setting. Surprisingly enough, although he had just completed 10,000 years of tapasya, Kardama's body looked quite good. Why? How is that? Because Lord Vishnu glanced at him and spoke to him with moon-like words, so the glance and the words of the Lord acted like nectar to rejuvenate his body and make it look very beautiful, tall, and lustrous. And of course, he was entire life celibate. His eyes of Kardama Muni were like gentle and expanded lotus petals. He wore simple cloth and had matted hair, jata. Swayambhuva Manu offered obeisances to Kardama, and the Rishi received him appropriately, seated him. And Kardama praised him. Oh, my Lord Swayambhuva Manu, you are representing the protective energy of Sri Hari and are his earthly representative. Because you have traveled all over the earth with your bow and huge army, there is morality in this earth planet. Otherwise, the rogues and rascals would have taken over. But under your guidance and leadership and control, piety is flourishing, and the greedy people are not effective now. Why have you come to my ashram? Whatever you want, I will do it. Swayambhuva Manu replied, Brahma created the Brahmanas, who are austere and knowledgeable, and endowed with mystic powers, and sages like you to spread Vedic knowledge for the protection of the Brahmanas. Kshatriyas like myself were created by Brahma for protection. I feel very fortunate to have your darshan and to touch the dust in your feet. Please, I have a request. Narada told me about your wonderful wisdom and character and handsome appearance and all your virtues. And my daughter heard about that, my daughter Devahuti, so she's become attached to you. So please accept her. She's a qualified person to be your wife and can run your household. Kardama replied, It's a fact, I want to marry. Your daughter is pure and chaste. Who wouldn't want to marry her? She's so lovely and effulgent. I once heard how Vishvasu, the Gandharva, became very agitated upon noticing your daughter playing with a ball on the palace roof, that he fell out of his airplane. So she must be quite beautiful. But I have some condition that after she gives birth to a child, I may leave home to accept the Paramahamsa order of renunciation and dedicate myself to Krishna Bhakti. Kardamuni stopped speaking and absorbed himself in Vishnu's Smaranam. Seeing his serenely smiling face, Devahuti became captivated. So then Swayambhuva gave his daughter to the sage. And Swayambhuva's wife, Shatarupa, gave all kinds of jewelry and clothing and household articles. Now he had fulfilled his kanyadan duties, given his daughter Devahuti to a proper husband. And Swayambhuva gave a last embrace to Devahuti, started crying in separation, and left. When Manu returned to his capital, Brahmavarta, everyone greeted him with music and prayers. And that city that he lived in was called Barahishmati. Because, why? Lord Varaha, some of his hairs fell out when he shook his body. And the hairs coming from Varaha's body, amazingly enough, transformed into Kusha and Kasha grass. Manu entered his palace. And continued with his usual duties there of hearing about the Lord every day and doing his functions. He was doing his duties, but because he was absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he lived a long time, 71 yugas. But he spent most of his time hearing and chanting about the pastimes of the Lord, and that's why Swayambhuva Manu was one of the Mahajans. And after fulfilling his term of office, he attained the perfection of his meditation and returned to Vaikuntha. Of course, that verse is there, spoken by Yamaraj in the 6th canto Bhagavatam, chapter 3, verse 20, where Yamaraj explains about himself as one of them and the other 11 Mahajanas who know the Dharma Sar, the essence of Dharma or pure devotional service to the Lord. Swayambhur Narada Shambhu Kumara Kapilo Manu Prahlado Janako Bhijmo Balir Vayasakir Vayam. Yamaraj said, Lord Brahma, Bhagavan Narada, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Lord Kapila, the son of Devahuti, Swayambhuva Manu, Prahlad Maharaj, Janak Maharaj, Grandfather Bhijma, Bali Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami, and I myself, Yamaraj, we 12 know Sanatan Dharma. Swayambhuva Manu Ki Jai. So now, losing her parents, Devahuti was feeling some bereavement. But she was constantly serving her husband Kardama very lovingly. She served intimately but respectfully. and controlled her senses and always spoke pleasingly. She abandoned all lust and pride, envy, greed, and vanity. She worked sanely and diligently and pleased her powerful husband, obviously an unbelievably ideal wife, which every man would long for, but unless one is in Krishna's Leela, then you won't get a wife like that. Devahuti was performing austerities following her husband, and she became a little weak because of her vows. But she expected, because she was serving her husband, that he would bless her. Then, with a voice choking with love, Kardama responded. He said, "Listen, O daughter of Swayambhuva Manu." Everything was very formal in those days. Remember, this is Satyuga. And they wouldn't call his wife, hey, Dinky. He would address in a very formal way, "Oh, daughter of Swayambhuva Manu." Of course, her name is Devahuti. But he would never say that, even directly to her, although he's so intimately connected with her. She's his faithful wife. But he said that, "I've observed all your tapasya and devotion, and you neglected your body to please me. And I've been blessed by the Lord, so I'm fearless and always happy. You have not yet experienced this type of spiritual consciousness, but I will help you to do so as a reward for your intense service." Devahuti was satisfied with these words. She smiled and said bashfully, in a faltering voice full of humility and love, "My dear husband, you are the master. You have attained perfection. You've mastered all mystic powers. I would like to produce some children, which is the desire of any chaste woman. My Lord, my Prabhu, please make arrangements so my skinny body will become fit and we can enjoy household life properly and produce children." Kardama Muni instantly, by using his mystic powers, created a palace. But it wasn't an ordinary palace, it was a flying palace. It was a palace come airplane. That's quite amazing. There's a painting of it in the third canto. And it had everything that palaces do. Furniture, it had everything that palaces have. Furniture and all decorated with costly gems and rubies and diamonds, and the palace had flags and artwork and looked very beautiful and became more beautiful as time went by. And it would also fulfill all desires. It was a pleasure palace. Kardava made quite an amazing house. Not only looked good, but it felt good and fulfilled all desires. Had green emerald domes inlaid with gold. And there are all kinds of wonderful birds, like swans gliding around the palace lakes. And then there were carvings, jeweled carvings, and sculptures of various birds, which looked so real that people got confused. Even Kardama was amazed by his production. So then he told his wife to bathe in Bindu Sarovara, which would fulfill all desires, and then they boarded this flying palace. Before entering that Bindu Sarovara lake, Devahuti looked pretty ragged. very covered with, says in Bhagavatam, thick layer of dirt, and she had jata, and certainly didn't look too attractive. But when she came out of the lake, she looked like a knockout, and so many, she had 1,000 young girls with her, like mandris or some kind of maidservants, and they all looked so beautiful. And these were Vidyadhara girls, so they massaged Devahuti and dressed her, and then she looked like Miss Universe after that. And she drank some kind of sweet ambrosia, which had an intoxicating effect. And seeing her reflection in the mirror, she thought that she was just suitable to offer herself for the pleasure of her husband. And they traveled everywhere from the pleasure valleys of Mount Meru, in a very passionate, beautiful environment, gentle breezes. They enjoyed over there with his wife, Devahuti, and all those thousands of 1,000 Vidyadhara girls. And it appeared that after so many years, he became very attached to his wife. But somehow, because he had mastered his self, he didn't lose his glory. And he went to Nandakanana Gardens and Chaitaratya Gardens and Manasasarovar Lake. And by the mercy of God, he could fly everywhere all over the universe, even more than the demigods. After showing his wife all these wonderful hotspots around the universe, then Kardavam expanded himself into 9 different forms to satisfy the desires of his wife, and they enjoyed intimately, oblivious to the passage of time, which was actually 100 years, which went by in a moment. And amazingly enough, the same day she became impregnated, she gave birth to 9 daughters. That's a good pregnancy period, only a few hours gestation period. So they look very beautiful. And then after that, Kardamuni said, well, I'm leaving. That was the condition. I'll give you some children. I'm leaving. And then Devahuti was a little upset because she wanted to have a son. And please, I want to become self-realized, but if you're going, who will teach me? Your daughters will get married and leave, and in your absence, and I have no son, so I won't be very happy. And moreover, my heart's desire, after it's all said and done, is to make spiritual advancement and realize the Lord. So then Kardamuni said, relax. I remember I had darshan, Lord Vishnu, and he said that an amsha of himself would enter your womb to become your son. So now you should worship Lord Vishnu. And this son that appears in your womb will liberate you by giving you spiritual knowledge. So then, finally, after many years of austerity and self-control, Kardamuni was able to introduce the Lord into the womb of Devahuti. And that was a very auspicious time. Gandharvas singing and dancing, and apsaras showering flowers. Everybody became happy and peaceful. Even Brahma and sages and rishis came to the ashram of Kardamuni, and they worshipped the Lord, his son. Then Brahma said to Kardam, I'm very happy with you, my son, Kardam. You have followed my obstruction, you have followed my orders without cheating, and you've honored me I wish all my sons would serve like you have. Karlam, all your daughters are very chaste and beautiful. Now the Lord is appearing and descending in the womb of your wife as Kapila Muni, and he will be very beautiful, have golden hair and lotus eyes, and lotus flowers marked on his feet. And then he said, listen, Devahuti, said Brahma. Lord Kapila, Bhagavan Kapila, will give you transcendental knowledge, remove all your ignorance, and you'll travel all over the world teaching Krishna consciousness. Then Brahma left, along with the four Kumaras and Narada, who are lifelong brahmacharis. And then Brahma gave his various daughters to different rishis, and gave over Anusuya to Atri, and his daughter Shraddha to Angira, etc. And then they left to their homes with their new husbands. After Lord Kapila appeared, Karlam Muni met him privately and paid obeisances. Said, my lord, you've come to my home to teach transcendental knowledge. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I surrender to your feet. Myself, I fulfilled my debt to my father, and all my desires are fulfilled. I want to become a Vairagi and wander the earth fully absorbed in thinking of you within my heart. And Vyasadeva, or let's say Maitreya, is saying it's quite amazing that God is appearing in Karlam Muni's house. That's the object of his life and goal of his meditation, to realize God or to be with God and see God. Yet God is there as his son, Bhagavan Kapila, Kapila Muni. Yet he's leaving. He's not going elsewhere to wander all the earth, look for God. Well, God is right here. Why are you going anywhere else? So the question is asked, why did Karlam Muni leave home when God has appeared in his home? Just stay there and serve God directly. Why wander around the earth as a Vairagi serving him in meditation? What is the answer? The answer is that he was like most descendants or avatars of the Lord and the Lord's devotees who take part in his Leela, as we've often said. They come to the earth for various purposes, to interact with the Lord and relish his pastimes, but primarily they come to teach we conditioned souls who will never leave home and never search for God. And what to speak of having God appear in our homes is out of the question, because we're so hopelessly attached to our so-called faithful, beloved wives and children. So Karlam, he left home, even though God is personally present there, to set an example that every man should follow the Vedas, which he did. And what do the Vedas say? They say that one should leave the house when he turns 50 years old and look for God. Prabhupada often quotes that, Pancha Urdvam Vanam Brajit. Pancha Urdvam, or something like that. Vanam Brajit. That at the age of 50, this is a Vedic injunction, it's a nisheda, a rule, a regulation, that every married man must go to the van, to the forest, move to Vrindavan. And moreover, that's not only going to Vrindavan, but it says the van he should take, enter the ashram of Vanaprast or Sannyas. His son, Bhagavan Kapila, replied to Karlam, I've appeared as your son to preach devotional Sankhya philosophy. You can leave the house as you desire. I give you permission. By surrendering to me, you will conquer death. I will teach my mother, Devahuti, so she can also attain perfection and self-realization. After hearing this from his son, Karla Muni circumambulated him. With a pure and pacified mind, he immediately left home and entered the forest without any hesitation. He followed the vow of silence, Mon Brut, so he could exclusively meditate on the Lord. He wandered alone all over the earth, just staying here and there. He had no material attachments, and he was situated in Shuddha Bhakti, Shuddha Vishnu Bhakti. Because of his pure consciousness, he could see Lord Vishnu in everyone's heart, Super Soul. And he saw how everything was existing in that Supreme Super Soul. And finally, Karla Muni gave up his body and went to Vaikuntha. Kapila stayed with his mother, and one day Devahuti approached her son and said, "My dear Lord Kapila, because of a life of sense gratification, I'm covered by ignorance. You are the Supreme Lord. You have appeared to remove darkness from this ignorance. Appeared to remove darkness of ignorance from this universe. Please remove my ignorance. I take shelter of you." Kapila smiled graciously and said, "Oh, most religious mother, I will teach you the mystic yoga system, which establishes a sambandha between the Paramatma and the Jiva." Now Kapila starts teaching philosophy. This is Kapila Shiksha. He said, "Consciousness is a platform of attachment. When consciousness is directed to Maya, one becomes bound in birth and death. When consciousness is attached to God, then one gets liberated. At that point, when the consciousness is fixed on God, one can see that the jiva, the soul, is transcendental, effulgent, although tiny. Then he becomes indifferent to Maya, and the influence of the three modes don't act upon him. One has to practice bhakti yoga to attain this auspicious realization." Attachment is the door to bondage or liberation. What are the qualities of such a spiritualist? Tatikshva Krunika Suridas Savadehanam Ajata Shatrava Shanto Sarva Sarabhushanam. They're tolerant, merciful, compassionate to everyone, and an enemy has never been born, and they're decorated with all wonderful qualities. They're always absorbed in hearing and chanting about the Lord. So they don't feel the miseries of material existence. They're too busy thinking of me or God. If one mixes with pure devotees, he becomes blissful because he'll hear Hari Katha, Krishna Katha. And the taste, a wonderful ambrosial taste of hearing the nectarine topics of Lord Krishna and Hari, they make one attracted to the Lord and increases shraddha and bhakti, faith and devotion. And then the devotee, so as he advances, he gives up all taste for sense gratification, becomes nishta, Krishna nishta. Then very quickly, in one lifetime, he can attain sangha of Krishna. Hearing Kapila Muni's shiksha, Devahuti began to ask a question. My son, I'm a woman, weak-minded woman. Is it possible for me to be so serious in bhakti that I will understand it and attain the perfection? Lord Kapila was very compassionate and became even more compassionate when hearing his mother's humble statement. So then he began to teach the devotional Sankhya. Devotional Sankhya, or Bhakti Sankhya, is a combination of bhakti and Ashtanga Yoga, mysticism. So the conclusion of this process is described here. When one purifies his mind by yoga sadhana, then he should meditate on the form of God in his heart, the Paramatma. And what does the Paramatma look like? He's smiling, beautiful, slightly reddish-tinted eyes due to his intense anurag for his Lakshmi and for his devotees. He wears a brilliant yellow dhoti, and on his chest he has small line of curling white hair, the Srivats, and a beautiful, brilliant Kostuba gem radiates from his effulgent dark blue chest. And bumblebees sing as they hover around his garland of Vaijayanti, garland, forest flowers. He has a beautiful pearl necklace which stands out like a row of swans flying across the monsoon sky. He wears various bracelets, armlets, and anklets. And he's the Paramatma, so he appears in the heart of the devotees, standing in the lotus of their heart. And when the advanced devotees see that peaceful Lord, they feel so fortunate to behold him. He's so young and very eager and anxious to bless his devotees. The devotional yogi who's seen the Paramatma should look at should fix his mind on each individual part of the Lord's beautiful transcendental body. The devotional meditation begins with Vishnu's lotus feet and the marks therein, like elephant goad and flag, thunderbolt, lotus, etc. The nails of the Lord, the toenails, are shining like ruby gems. And they're brilliant, that brilliant light emanating from the ruby toenails of Lord Vishnu in the heart act like thunderbolts to destroy the mountain of sin in the mind of the aspiring devotee. Therefore, to become pure and free from kam, krodh, lobh, moh, mada, matsarya, one should spend considerable time meditating on the radiance, shape, color of the feet of the Paramatma and Lord Vishnu, and also the various marks, charan, chinna. And also the yogi should meditate on the consort of the Paramatma Vishnu, Mother Lakshmi, the goddess of facilities. And what is she doing? She's very tenderly massaging the feet and legs and thighs of Lord Vishnu. And the devotee should meditate on those thighs being caressed by Lakshmi. And he should contemplate on Vishnu's beautiful, shapely, round hips, which have a nice reddish cummerbund wrapped tightly around them. Then the devotional yogi should meditate on the lotus navel of the Lord, and then the nipples of the Lord's chest, which look like a pair of emeralds. And then meditate on the chest of the Lord, which is the residence of Lakshmi Devi. And that chest of the Lord will give all transcendental bliss to the mind and eyes of the meditative yogi devotee. That devotee should then meditate upon the Lord's shapely neck, which is enhanced by the hanging Kostuba mala, Then the four arms of the Lord were the source of so many powers, and with those arms he controls the demigods. Or rather, the demigods derive strength to perform their functions of controlling the material world. The ornaments of the Lord should be meditated on. The Sudarshan disc with 1,000 spokes dazzling brilliantly. The conch and komudi. And the garland the Lord wears, and the bumblebees and the pearl necklace around his neck. They're considered to be various shuddha jivas that are always engaged in a service. Now the devotee should meditate on the lotus face of Lord Vishnu, his prominent nose, and his makara kundala, and his crystal clear cheeks. Curly black hair surrounds the beautiful face of Lord Vishnu, and dancing eyes and eyebrows. Now, with full devotion, one should meditate on the compassionate glances of Lord Vishnu, because he always casts such soothing, comforting glances upon the devotees so they can become relieved from the fearful miseries of Maya. These glances of the Lord, which are so soothing, are joined with his loving smiles, which are not only loving but merciful. That smile of the Lord, one should meditate on it. Because in separation from the Lord, the devotee is crying profusely due to the grief of separation. He's crying an ocean of tears, and that beautiful smile will dry up all those tears and soothe and satisfy the inner reaches of the devotional heart. And the sages who may be disturbed by the bow, flower bow of Cupid or lust, when they meditate upon the arched eyebrows of the Paramatma, Lord Vishnu, in the heart, and they will get free from the charm created by the Kamadev, the god of sex. He uses his flower bow and shoots the sages with the winking, blinking, glittering eyes of Maya Devis. But if we meditate on the arched eyebrows of the Lord, that's another kind of bow which fills the meditative yogi, devotee, sage with great satisfaction and frees him from the impalement of the arrows of Kamadev, the god of lust. Then with a love-drenched heart, a devotee should meditate on the laughter of Vishnu, ah, ha, 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 which is very captivating. When the Paramatma, Lord Vishnu, laughs, he has small jasmine bud-like teeth, which look appear rosy due to the reflecting the reddish his reddish lips. And one can see that in this meditation. And upon seeing that, the devotional yogi loses his desire to see anything else. If one follows this detailed process of meditation in the Sankhya yoga system, then he will surely become attached to God. And that attachment will create sattvic vikars in the body and mind of the devotee. His hair will stand erect due to bliss. And he will cry continuously due to his intense love for the Lord. Finally liberated and absorbed in samadhi, that yogi will be cared for directly by the Lord. Yoga kshevam maham yaham. At that point of devotional samadhi or perfection, prema, let's say, dharana, dhruvana smriti samadhi, bhakti samadhi, that devotional yogi, he won't even know how his body is acting or moving or maintaining. He'll think he's just dreaming, but somehow the Lord is conducting everything. Devahuti asked a question, Lord Kapila, please describe to me the samsara chakra, birth and death cycle, so I can become firmly detached from Maya. So then there's a long detail description about the jivas in the womb and what they experience packed up over there, and various karma descriptions of the results of inauspicious material activities, and the time factor, how it's pushing everyone like powerful wind, and everything ultimately is destroyed by that time factor. And the attached materialist laments the loss of his body and family, whatever he considers so significant. And he's very attached to his body, even if he goes to hell. He's full of anxiety over his family maintenance. He goes to all kinds of sinful, illicit activities, and never fulfills his hope. These are the forest of material enjoyment, the attached person. The foolish man attached to Maya, he gives his heart and body to his wife, who falsely charms him with illusion. And her embraces and laughing and giggling in solitary places. And then the little sweet words of his children, pitter-patter of their feet. And then, of course, he absorbs his mind in politics and diplomacy, and somehow or other gets money by hook or by crook to maintain the whole charade. And uses all his money to serve his family, never performs any charity or Brahman Dan or Vaishnav Dan. And he just eats whatever scraps are left by his family. Quite a terrible life for the attached householder. And sometimes he fails in business and steals money or borrows it, can't pay back to maintain his family. This is life. And he gets old, and then his family neglects him, and he laments. He gets deformed by old age, and just it's dragged off at death like an animal, remaining at home. Can't eat, his eyes don't work, his tongue, taste don't work, his ears are deaf. He's inhaling, exhaling, wheezing and breathing in great difficulty. Finally lies down, everyone cries, gets around his bed, tries to give them some last instructions, he can't even speak. He dies frustrated, completely unconscious and suffering painfully. The fearful Yamadutas come before him, he passes still in urine in the bed, leaves his body through the anus and goes to hell. That's the glorious end of the materialistic person. And the Yamadutas drag him away, cover his subtle body, and he suffers all kinds of distress due to his sins. And there's a whole description about hell and the hot suns and scorching suns and sands, red hot sands, forest fires on all sides, barking dogs biting him, he's getting whipped, can't eat or drink, no rest, falls unconscious, he's still forced to go to the Yamadutas, passes through a great distance in a couple minutes. Then he finally meets the maker, the judge, Yamaraj. Then he goes to various hells, and there's described dogs and vultures rip out his guts, snakes bite him, poisonous spiders torment him, and elephants, they tie ropes around elephants and then they pull off his arms and legs. He's thrown down from mountaintops or drowned underwater. Then it describes the those that engage their whole life in illicit sex, indulgence, they go to so many hells, Tamishra, Anda Tamishra, and Rolarava. and envy, all the different hells are described there. And then it describes how one gets a particular, how he gets his particular next body. Famous verses there, Prabhupada describes. The verses there. Chapter 31, Kapila Shiksha, third canto, verse 1. Kapila Muni said, Bhagavan Kapila said, Karmana devane trena jantur deho papataye. Striya pravishta udaram pumsarita kanashriya. Under the supervision of the Supreme Lord, Karmana devanetrena. Devanetrena. And according to the result of his work, Karmana, the living entity, the Jivatma, is forced to enter the womb of a woman through the particle of male semen to assume a particular type of body. Reta kana ashraya. So dwelling in or taking shelter of a kana, which means kan, small particle, reta, or the reta means semen. So then it describes, Kapila Muni describes the whole sequence of pregnancy, and day one this happens, and day two, etc. And how that living entity experiences different sufferings at the end of 5 months in the womb. The fetus begins to move on different sides to indicate right side means male, left side female. And he's suffering in there, so many worms and getting bitten. He's hungry and suffering, loses consciousness and becomes conscious. If his mother eats bad food, salty, pungent, bitter, then he gets the result of that. And if he's not all the time, but some very fortunate, very religious, previously very pious religious children, or let's say fetuses or little babies in the womb, they can remember all the trouble of their previous 100 births, and then they lament. Not everyone, very few actually, but at 7 months he becomes conscious. And he can hear outside sounds. That's why we're supposed to vibrate Hari Gita and read Bhagavatam aloud and have loud kirtans, or at least audible. So the child at 7 month old baby in the womb can hear that and get some purification and get some attachment right in the womb. But the very fortunate and pious and rare jiva, he gets to see a movie of his previous 100 births, and then he praise the Lord. He said, God, you're here and I take shelter of you. Somehow, because of my bad luck, my bad activities, I'm suffering this misery and I've forgotten you. I'm controlled by Maya and now struggling for existence. Maya is too strong. I won't be able to serve you unless I get your mercy. I surrender unto you. I'm really suffering in his stool and urine and blood in this womb of my mother. Let me out of here. I'm counting the days. When will I get out of this prison of this womb? O merciful Lord, now, although I've only been here for 9 or 10 months or ready to come out, I feel very grateful to you. I've received this human body, which is a facility to worship you and understand you. Now I have some clearer consciousness. Maybe I should just stay in this womb and meditate upon you. I'm afraid if I come out, I'll forget everything. Captured by Maya. So some very rare and few pious babies in the womb, they pray like this and turn to the Lord. But then there's the birth, and it's so forceful and painful for the baby. And it's rather horrible, blood and stool and all these fluids, as everyone knows. And then that force of that birth, he becomes He forgets, he's so helpless. And he can't remember that time in the womb when he expressed so much determination to get self-realized. And then it describes the sufferings of different stages of life, suffering as a baby and school time, suffering of studies and playtime, and the frustration of unfulfilled desires, becoming angry due to frustration. And then we grow up to become a young man or young woman, and we become lusty and proud, and become fully attached to our material body due to ignorance, and then attached to other temporary things, I and mine, my bicycle, my shoes, my clothes. And then he has to engage in so many sins to maintain his body, and enjoys his tongue and genitals in various perverted ways, and goes to hell due to his sins, due to bad association. He loses all his good qualities, loses all his higher knowledge, and he ends up in his middle age just like a dancing dog controlled by a woman. And then it says there's no greater bondage than that which results from attachment to a woman for a man, or some man who's a sex monger that can also infect another man. And among all the created beings of Brahma, only Narayan Rishi is free from attraction to the form of a woman. Woman's form actually represents the fullest representation of the illusory energy of Maya. The power of Maya in the form of a woman is so great that all she has to do is move her eyebrows and she can control the biggest, the world's greatest conquerors and heroes. The Shastras describe that attractive women are the gateway to hell, especially for someone trying to advance in spiritual life. Kapila enlightened his mother, Devahuti, and she started to pray gratefully to her son, O Bhagavan Kapila, you are the Supreme Lord, although you have appeared from my womb. Everything is in your abdomen. You're controller of creation, destruction of the universe. At the end, you lie down on a banyan leaf like a small baby sucking your toe. You can do whatever you want. If anyone sees you eye to eye, irregardless of his low birth, he can become a great person. If anyone chants your name or glories or offers obeisances or remembers you, they become glorious. Even dog eaters become worshipful. If someone's chanting Bhagavan's name, he must have, in his previous life, performed all kinds of homa, yajna, tapasya, tirtha snans, Vedic studies. Kapila was very satisfied with his mother's words, and he said, I've taught you a very easy path of self-realization. Follow it, and you'll soon be liberated, even while in your body, and then you'll reach my spiritual abode. Kapila took permission and left his mother to go and preach. She stayed in Kardama's ashram and absorbed herself in Vishnu Smaran, Vishnu Dhyan, meditation. Eventually, hair turned gray. She got very thin due to tapasya. It was so beautiful, the ashram of Kardam on the banks of the Saraswati. The demigods were even envious of the opulence of his place. And gold chairs and couches and ivory chairs covered with golden lace. First-class marble walls inlaid with gems. And the gems were so brilliant, he didn't need any lighting. The jewels of his walls illuminated everything. beautiful gardens and flowering trees and fruit trees and flowers everywhere around. Previously, when Karla Muni was in the ashram, his wife Devahuti would sport in these various ponds, and even Gandharvas would come and sing the glories of Karla Muni. But despite all this opulence, Devahuti gave it all up. She wore simple cloth. She was missing her son and always meditating him on separation. Soon she became free from all material attachments, pure in heart, free from the miseries of Maya. She became blissful in meditative trance, detached from her body. There was various maidservants of hers that were taking care of her, so she didn't become completely emaciated. Kardavan's ashram was called Siddhapad. Finally, Devahuti went back to Godhead, and the material elements of her body mixed in the water. After leaving his mother, Kapila traveled northeast, and so many beings would accompany him, apsaras, gandharvas, charanas, glorifying him. Kapila came to Ganga Sagar. This is the place where the Ganga River, after starting in Gangotri, crosses the plains of India and finally empties into the Bay of Bengal and near Calcutta. And he stayed there for some time. And it's said that the Bhagavatam says that even now Kapila Muni is staying there somewhere, invisible, of course. He's absorbed in meditation and he's worshipped by all the great acharyas of the devotional Sankhya system. So that concludes the discussion of Kapila Muni.